Welcome to Romanistan.
We're your friendly neighborhood gypsies.
I'm Paulina.
And I'm Jess. And today we're interviewing activist siblings Rumen and Rumyana Humquist.
Rumen Humquist was adopted at the age of 4 in Sofia, Bulgaria, and has lived in North Minneapolis since then. Rumen is now a graduate student pursuing a master's in kinesiology and a sport performance degree at the University of Northern Iowa. On top of pursuing a master's, Rumen is pursuing a teaching degree in physical education and health. He serves as the men's and women's strength coach for the golf team. Outside of school, Rumen has his own holistic health and sports performance podcast. Rumen's identity as a Romani adoptee who has experienced discrimination in the education system has inspired him to pursue these degrees and career fields. One of Rumen's proudest achievements towards advocacy around adoption and inspired by his personal experiences was a self-led fundraising campaign that raised over $10,000 for Lutheran Social Services, a local adoption agency and organization.
Rumyana Humquist is a graduate student pursuing a Master of Human Rights degree at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs. After Rumyana graduates in May 2023 with a law minor and a concentration in international conflict, security, and diplomacy, she intends to do public advocacy and education work to raise awareness and increase visibility of Romani people. She views this as one pathway to effectively promote and advance Romani civil and human rights. As a Romani adoptee and a queer, white-passing woman, reclaiming identity and agency over self-determination is central to Rumyana's work in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Through DEI education, she targets the challenges of intersectionality and includes efforts to eliminate the word gypsy from the public lexicon. She has a published op-ed piece in the Minneapolis Star Tribune on the importance of critically examining biases and language that can perpetuate harmful stereotypes. Her professional capstone paper continues to address this issue, exploring themes of identity, statelessness, and the impact of exonyms on Romani agency and representation in political and social spheres. She welcomes anyone who is interested in discussing these topics to reach out to her at any time. Welcome.
Hello. Yeah, welcome. Tell us a little about yourselves. Where are you guys from? Where are you now? And what have you been up to? Rumyana, we can start with you.
I guess I didn't include this in my bio, but I was born in Bulgaria, Schumann specifically. The Bulgarian system specifically, you get put into sort of like a baby orphanage and then you move to a toddler orphanage at age 3. Long story short, was adopted at 5 and a half, currently living in Minnesota. And what have I been up to lately? Let's see. I like to just say stirring the pot, but what does that mean? I don't know. I guess like just kind of like, yeah, advocacy where I can do it and, you know, empowering voice when I can. But kind of like just for funsies, I do a lot of walking and running. I like to be in nature. I have a couple of part-time jobs. And then I spend a lot of time with my cat, Liev. And then most recently, I was gifted an accordion. So I'm learning how to play accordion right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I can play for Jaka for now. So.
Nice. You should reach out to Petra Gelbart. She plays the accordion and she used to be in NYU's music program and like led the Romani program there. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a 120 button one. So they just like threw me into the deep end of the pool.
Perfect.
That is very cool. And how about you, Rumen?
My name is Rumen Humquist. I go by he, him, his pronouns. And where I'm from, I'm originally from Varna, Bulgaria, which is close to the Black Sea. But I was adopted from Sofia, which is the capital of Bulgaria. I was adopted when I was 4 years old. Where am I right now? I am at Cedar Falls, Iowa. Currently as a graduate assistant and teaching assistantship. So I teach sometimes undergrad, and I also serve as men's and women's strength coach, pursuing a master's in kinesiology and sport performance, and then I'm getting a teaching degree. What have I been up to? Well, I can tell you my girlfriend and I just went to Pride. And we definitely are in support of that. And we just really like doing that and like to serve others and just like to do fun projects. I know on the side, I like to drink coffee. I like to work out, like to read a lot of things, and like to listen to music.
Awesome. So on Ramanistan, we're really interested in the margins of the margins, the folks who might not necessarily fit in or conform exactly to expectations. We like to call them the rebels. It's a really broad term that our guests have had a lot of varying responses to. So we love to ask, do you consider yourselves rebels?
Yes, I do consider myself a rebel. And I appreciate that framing. I haven't thought of it that way before, but I would say it's just hard to exist sometimes. And I had some notes written up before. I listened to Constantine's episode and it really caught my eye or attention that he said something very similar of like just existing in and of itself is something that he feels like is sort of being a rebel. And I have that same feeling. And yeah, I guess part of why I also feel like a rebel as well is that I think, unlike Ruman, since he's clearly, you know, something, quote unquote, I'm white passing. And I would say that for me, that's had like a particular impact on like how people perceive me and treat me and like assume what comes with me. And so in terms of being a rebel, I think erasure is a really big deal for me. And before I met my birth family in 2014, when I was 20, I just grew up with both my adoptive family and people just being like, you know, maybe you're Roma, maybe you're not, maybe you're just white, you know, what are you sometimes? Just kind of like that racial ambiguity. But then I met my birth family and, you know, race is supposedly, you know, race, quote unquote, is a construct. But at the same time, it was like seeing my Romani family and seeing just like the genetic variation and realizing like, oh, I am Romani just based on visual cues. I would say really sparked my interest in just very explicitly talking about Romani issues and particularly erasure. And so, yeah, I would say part of being a rebel is that I don't look like what people would say is, you know, Romaniness per se sometimes. And I don't look like somebody that comes with the set of experiences that I come with. But I've also, you know, in struggling to sort of own that, have framed it in a way that like part of history's goal and part of like smear campaigns, like political campaigns, extermination campaigns, we've been the target of those for so long. And so for me to not own it and to be explicit and aggressive about it is to me kind of like copping to erasure. And so that's kind of how I see myself being a rebel.
Great. Yeah. Thank you for that.
I do want to mention, and I'm not undermining your experience at all, but I was, before you even said that, I was like, you guys totally look like you could be my cousins or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I know it sounds kind of funny, but you look gypsy to me.
I don't know. I think like Americans, they don't think white is just white, but I've had people say to me that like are from Europe, or I actually just recently met a Romanian person in my human rights program or at the Humphrey School. And yeah, I feel like I do look Romani to people from Europe or who know who Romani are, but not in the US, which is really interesting.
Yeah, no, I feel that. it's a tricky one to place sometimes for some people. How about you, Rumi?
Yeah, I would say, yes, there's two ways I can go about this. So the educational department and then like the medical health field. So like, well, first and foremost, rewind for a couple seconds. So I'm not obviously white or black. So like in my experience, I've definitely got racial discrimination on both ends of the stick, right? Because you're not white or black, you're just other. So like you're whatever we're going to, you know, the lack of education will put you in one category. So that's A. But the two where I definitely have a lot of experiences, you know, I, in my education, have struggled with teachers and professors and me experiencing racial discrimination and racism. So like at one point where it was 5 years consecutive where every single time I took a math test, you know, several times a year, she would harass me and say, extremely unprofessional things, and it would happen for 5 years straight. So that's one thing that has empowered me to become a teacher, because I know when it comes down to, like, you know, performance and execution, when the heat comes, I can handle it. It's just natural to me. And so I take that as kind of being a rebel. And then the medical perspective, in the sense of, like, Western society in the US, like in the health field, statistically, you know, when you're a child who, you know, was 3 months premature, 3 pounds at birth, you know, you're viewed as, you're not going to make it. You're deficient in many different ways. And when I came here, like, one thing I really appreciated from my adopted parents, Sue and Dale, is like, they just provided unconditional love. And so when I came here, you know, there's a lot of doctors and nurses that, like, hey, you know, they wrote letters saying that your child is deficient in X, Y, and Z. And like, my mom and dad just ripped it up until I was at the age where they thought that it was appropriate and I could handle the maturity. Then they gave me those letters. And I thought that was really empowering, because I mean, it's when you can experience that, and then when you go through it, it just gives you that, I guess, that extra edge. So.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Something to say, Jess.
Thank you for those really thoughtful answers. It's interesting the ways in which you both identify as rebels, but definitely in some different ways. And I'm also sorry that you experienced so much racism in school. That really, really sucks. And I think it's very commendable that you decided to become a teacher and kind of like become the teacher that you deserved, which I think is super empowering. My own teaching journey was sort of similar. I didn't have a great time in school with kids or the teachers, a lot of different types of discrimination. And so it was really, really nice when I had a little stint as a college professor and as a middle school teacher and got to try to be the role model I really needed as a kid. I think it can be just really healing.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it, but I guess, like, Rumen and I, well, I know that we come from very different directions in some ways, but interesting that we kind of converge in the education sphere, like,
yeah,
like from very different directions. But yeah, with like me and DEI work, that really came from a place of like not being seen, but like still leading me to that similar place of like wanting to be a better role model and helping people who are missed in education or in like advocacy campaigns or just like public, you know, anything to do with like public education. Yeah, I just found that there was a lot missing and that like it's very easy to miss like important parts of people's identities. And that's very much how I felt for like very intensely, especially in the last few years. And so, yeah, I guess I'm just sort of having that epiphany right now, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really nice when you get to grow up and then do the things that you felt like you needed and like try to provide that service for others. And, you know, we might not be perfect at it all the time, but we're definitely trying to do better, which I think is beautiful.
Yeah. Again, like Constantine said, it's like, it's unfortunate that the onus falls on like the people who experience those gaps or the prejudice or the lack thereof. It's seems to be something that I am seeing more and more, especially since I've listened to your podcast, because I feel like there hasn't been that much representation. I've had a hard time feeling connected to anyone, because there are, like, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as far as I know, like, no Romani people. And I met the first other Romani person besides Rumen just last year, and it was like the most amazing experience. But yeah, to sort of see these like little themes crop up and realize that, like, yeah, there's like a certain type of, you know, Romani experience, whether you're adopted or not. And I find it interesting that those things come full circle.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of Constantine, in our last episode with him, we mentioned that adoption has been one of our most requested topics from our listeners. And I think this is people like sending in, but it's also people that I've met, random people that I've spoken to. And so, yeah, it's definitely a needed, like, it needs more attention. So here we are. Would you guys like to tell us a little more about your adoption stories?
Definitely. Rumen, why don't you go for it?
I gotcha. Well, I think for me, and that may not necessarily be everyone's experience, but I know for myself, I believe that God put my sister and I together and my mom and dad. So when my parents were looking to see if they could adopt, they were really, really close friends by this woman named Mary at my soon to become my preschool, and her son unfortunately got murdered. And she kind of dedicated her life to kind of help families put together. And so my mom couldn't get pregnant. And then, so when they tried to go, she was like, "Hey, I know the kids for you. Have the perfect kids for you." And they came out to Bulgaria. This adoption specifically, I remember because it was so, I used to follow this one girl around. I used to pick on her all the time. And and I always would depend on her for like help too at the same time. And like, it's interesting because little did I know that that would be Rumiana today. And that's the whole, I think, is the craziest thing that ever happened, because, and I never knew that that would become my sister, but I always would like depend on her. And then other than that, I think, honestly, I'm forever grateful. If it wasn't for, I think adoption can be not necessarily the greatest experience for others. You know, I know people who will never even talk about their adoption story. You know, I know some people and it's sad. My sister and I, from my experience, I'll speak for myself, it's the best. I can't complain. It is the most beautiful thing that ever happened.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too.
Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, aka the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fales, just a normal gay guy, I guess.
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watch.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on the big... Oh, wait. I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On the big cunty couch. Mwah.
That's such amazing synchronicity. Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, well, I totally got chills listening to that. Very sweet.
Well, I guess I could probably fill in a couple of gaps that Ruman skipped over. First of all, he always says that he looked up to me and followed me around the orphanage. I really don't remember that. I feel like, memory is like pretty unreliable. And as I'm like looking more and more into sort of like childhood experiences and memories, because that's kind of where I've been recently in terms of my adoption story and like what I'm interested in and figuring out with myself. But there's only one time that I remember, and I feel like he was on a set of stairs going up them and I was going into a different room. And like, that's the only memory I have of him. So I find it interesting. And then when we came over, and a lot of the stuff that we know about the adoption process and like the experiences and interactions we had with people, I think for me have very much been told to me. And it's like, I have a lot of memories, but a lot of it is also has been told to me. But when we came over, that I was apparently like pretty much Ruman's interpreter. And yeah. And I sort of was like, you know, I told him what was safe and what wasn't. And like, you know, he just sort of like I was his big sister, even though we're not even like a year apart. We're 345 days. So we're like the same age for 20 days in August, which is kind of interesting. Like some things really do converge and you have to wonder like what's going on in the universe. But yeah, I say for me and my adoption story, our parents were always very open about it. They never hid it. They're always like, "Hey, if you have questions, please ask us." They low key put like little like adoption family magazines in the bathroom when we were growing up. And like, that's not anything little kids are going to read, even though I was bookworm. Yeah. I'd say for me, for some reason, like meeting my birth family, because we both met our birth families, we went to Bulgaria. My mom managed to find some guy that used to work for the Bulgarian government and was able to track down our families. And yeah, very interesting, but found our families. And yeah, that's where it really started for me, I would say. Just like, I think the visual impact of realizing like you know, because Romani families can be very genetically varied, you know, and like that just has to do with our history. But for some reason, seeing it was like, it was seeing, you know, unfortunately, I don't like the concept of like see it to believe it, but that's kind of the impact that that experience had on me in some ways. And so that's, I would say, where I really started to get interested in like, think about my experiences and how having lived in an orphanage for the first 5.5 years of my life, and then being adopted and like literally having to learn a new language, a new culture, like have a family, move from having like a communally oriented lifestyle to like having our own room. Like there are all these things. And like even now there's so many things to like still like parse through. But yeah, I mean, like, I think adoption, being adopted and like adoption stories, like they are just inherently like every aspect about adoption, or like being an adoptee, it's just very much weaved into every part of who you are, I think. And it has its pluses and its minuses. And I think like Ruman was sort of alluding to is that I think oftentimes, and I'm probably more protective about talking about being adopted than Ruman is. He's always been more of like the charismatic, outgoing, like he'll tell people stuff. And then I'm over here like cautious and reserved and like, you know, waiting and seeing. But I've started to do more of the talking than the telling because I realize how important that is. But lost my train of thought. But oh, I think that sometimes, yeah, like adoption can be a bad word, or like there's stigma attached to it, or you know, people think like, oh, it's white people and Christians and whatever going and getting children from other countries. And like, yeah, it can be that, and it is that. And yes, our parents are white and Christian, but like the way that they approach adoption and have handled it since, and like who we are as their kids has always been, it's been, I think, probably one of the healthier examples you can find out there. And even like, I think that my mom in particular has been very good about paying attention to language. And like she does, she's always said like, I don't like the term like give up for adoption, because like nobody ever just like gives up their child, like it's a product of your context. And so yeah, I guess I'm still learning a lot and figuring it all out and putting it together. Like, you know, here and there I'll find out more details, or like I'm still connected with my birth family on Facebook, and so they like try to speak Bulgarian to me on Facebook, and I do know a little bit of Russian, so like it's always a hot mess trying to communicate. But at the same time, yeah, it's just, it's like, I think it's a never ending story type of thing. And it's like a never ending learning experience as well. So yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting to find out. I guess what came to mind was like my birth mom has had, I think, 10 or 11 kids total. And I'm the only one that was put up for adoption. So like for my adoption story, that's like a interesting detail that I feel like there's just things like that that come up. And it really makes you wonder about like what was she experiencing at that time, or like which situation was she in, or like, you know, I've done a lot of reading and trying to figure out kind of like the European context, and like thinking about, you know, like Romani children are disproportionately institutionalized, like double digits versus like what representation we are in the population, like the general population, and like Romani mothers and being single, you know, just like all sorts of things. And just also history, the type of, you know, just like forced migration and like World War II, just all of that historical trauma and like cultural trauma. And just wondering how that all maybe like boiled down to me specifically being her only child to be adopted. Yeah, I guess I'm going kind of on a tangent, but it's just like, there's so much to think about. And I think that, yeah, adoption can be very complex, but on the whole, I think it's been, there's so much good that can come from it. Like I wouldn't be so self-respected, so self-reflective and introspective, and like be thinking about the world in the ways that I am if I hadn't been adopted.
Yeah, thank you both for answering that question. It is definitely complex, and we really appreciate you sharing your experiences and your thoughts.
Can you guys tell us what projects you're most passionate about right now?
Yeah, I'll start on this one. Projects that I'm doing, I mean, I can say the most proudest project that I've ever done regarding activism specifically Romanis and Bulgarian, is I did a project called the 10,024 hour about 4 or 5 years ago, I think. And the 10,024 hour was about, I wanted to raise $10,000 to kids in Rumiana and I's orphanage. And I also wanted to do a 24-hour workout that consisted of 10,000 push-ups, combined total of 10,000 push-ups, leg raises, and jumping jacks. And then I also swam 10 miles. So I did that, and every single rep that I did was dedicated to a child that doesn't get adopted. So $10,000, 10,000 reps, 10,000 kids. And I did that, and I raised actually over $10,000. So that would be like my most proudest project that I've ever done towards people of my descent. And one thing I've always wanted to do once I was adopted, and I promised myself, is to give bigger than myself one day. And certainly I did that. So that's one thing I'm very proud of.
That is really extraordinary. Do you have a project that you're working on currently that you're really passionate about? I love that, but I also want to know what you're doing now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm doing a podcast. I do, it's called Rumination Holistic Health and Sport Performance. After my master's, I want to open my own holistic health and sport performance company. But what I do now is I try to learn from the people who I want to work with. And I just interview professional Olympic athletes all around the world. And I just love learning. That's really what I like to do. And I learn, especially the conversations that don't happen at the highest level of sport performance, mental health, LGBTQ, all these, a lot of race, identity, actually. There's been a lot of controversial topics we've talked about, and the positive note, actually. So that's one thing I really enjoy doing, is talking to athletes.
Yeah, that's really cool. Can you say the name of your podcast one more time? I didn't quite catch the beginning of it.
Rumen Nation, that's Rumenation. Holistic health and sport performance. If you just look that up on YouTube, you'd be able to find a lot. So
awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ruman's very much an entrepreneur. I definitely take like the academic approach. I wouldn't say that I have like specific projects in place, but I think that I have started a lot of things, but it's very hard to keep the momentum going, especially as like a person by myself. Yeah. So I guess like for me, sort of just an ongoing thing that I definitely want to expand on and like make more of a primary activity in my life is just sort of like fighting or protesting the term gypsy in formal spaces. So it was mentioned in the bio that I have an opinion piece that was published in the Star Tribune. It was in June 2020, I think. But that was in response to a local food truck that I just happened upon at a food festival. And like, this is kind of like the experience of being Roma, but it's just like being assaulted with like some random association that has nothing to do with who we are. So like, I saw the name of this food truck and it was Sweet Gypsy Waffles. I was like straight up like, no, absolutely not. The unfortunate thing is like I always get really stressed out and like nervous and like, God, I'm just trying to be in a public place and live my life, you know. But now I always kind of feel like it's a responsibility because like I'm one of the only people in my area that can actually speak up for us. So yeah, I went over and I talked to the food truck owner, and I always come from like a humble place, and I check first, like, oh, you know, are you Roma? Like, do you know like the history of this word? No, I don't. Oh no, I'm a traveling athlete and I loved traveling in Europe and I love waffles. So I slapped the two together. Like anyway, this food truck was actually featured in the taste section of the Star Tribune because it is owned by a Minnesota Lynx WNBA player. And I was like, you have like a public profile and this is like the major newspaper in this metro area. Like absolutely no way am I going to see this word condoned for everybody to use and think it's okay. And my mom was the one that actually sent me the link. And so literally that day I wrote an article explaining like why people can't use that word and like the history, like some of like the major aspects of Romani history and like why that word is what it means historically and why it's what it brings up for Roma. But yeah, I guess long story short for that, like fighting the term gypsy when it's used by businesses in particular. So whenever I see it, I try to talk to people. I know with the food truck thing, I like created some flyers and like we walked around that festival or a different festival later on and like disseminated the flyers and just talked to people on like that word and why it wasn't okay and like why we were protesting this name. They did change it and they changed it to Sweet Truby Waffles. But I would say that's like the most successful. Actually, there was another one, but yeah, I know like Target one time had like, you know, like the gypsy costumes online. And I actually happened to be in a book club with a lady who worked at Target and was high enough that she was able to get like the filter that they use to make sure that vendors aren't selling inappropriate things. Like she was able to get that filter like rechecked and banned. And so that was like probably, that was a really interesting thing. But I would say on the whole, it's not usually that successful, but I just try to like, whenever I see it happen, at least like give them a little poke and like, hey, like, you know, this word, it's not really okay. This is why. Interestingly enough, I feel like the last few times that I've talked to a business is like security has been called within 5 minutes. Like, oh, we're going to call the police. Like they're going to be here in 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we have 5 minutes to talk then. Like, yeah, people get really defensive about it. And like, yeah, it's interesting to say the least, but
the very definition of like Karen. Ugh.
Very Karen energy. But yeah, I guess academically just trying to add sort of to like the academic literature. I haven't added anything yet, but like that's my goal career wise is to sort of kind of write the ratio of like Romani representation and making sure that it's accurate and correct. So I guess in terms of academics, like working on publishing stuff that's advocating for Romani and addressing some of the major issues. One of them I think that I would like to continue that I did start was research on media representation of Romani people. And I want to start doing it like by decades. I've only looked at a decade at this point. There's a lot out there, but like newspaper articles and what kind of topics are associated with like terms that people use for Romani. So like, you know, whether it's gypsy capitalized, gypsy GYP, gypsy GIP, like Romani, Roma, like, so I think that's a project that I have started and that I would like to continue or kind of like expand on while in school.
Yeah, thank you for that. A lot of people write to us a lot asking for our advice about how to handle when a show that they like used gypsy in a derogatory way or a business that they like, you know, uses it as their branding. And usually our advice is just like, write to them if you have the energy directly, like be polite, be clear, give them the benefit of the doubt, but make it clear to them why they need to change things. And it might be really helpful for people to hear that they can also, you know, publish articles and hand out flyers if it's something that's really on their hearts. And it's definitely not the responsibility of every Romani person to like make this their personal cause, but if it really matters to you, then yeah, talk about it.
Yeah, like I've had moments like where I'm really into it and then I back away because it is a lot of energy and it's stressful. It's not nice to have people like tell you that, oh, they're using this word in a different way or that, you know. So yeah, for people who, you know, want to know how to talk about or approach people, like, do it when you have energy. Like you said, give people the benefit of the doubt. And yeah, if you don't talk to people, or you, like if you don't ask, you don't receive, is kind of my way of thinking about it.
Yeah. And I mean, we've definitely also had a lot of people, Roma included, be like, this is really like not a big issue. There are much bigger issues to be concerned about. But at the same time, particularly in the US, American ideas of what Roma are is very connected to the word gypsy and all the misconceptions it has. And so it's nice to be able to create language awareness. And yeah, maybe it's not our top goal as a people, like looking for our rights, but it's definitely valuable and like worth having conversations about and addressing. I was psyched when they changed the gypsy moth into the spongy moth. I was like, thank you, because the gypsy moth is super destructive, and that's why they were calling it the gypsy moth. So it's like small wins. It's nice.
So what is on the horizon for both of you guys?
Well, the horizons look like for me is finish up my master's in the fall or in the spring. It's coming up spring. And then finish up that teaching degree. And then there's there's two options. One is doing a doctor's degree or moving back to Minnesota with my girlfriend and being a teacher, and then opening my opening a sport performance, like a facility, and then actually training like a junior Olympic athletes would be ideal. So yeah.
For sure. For me, obviously graduating from the Humphrey School with my degree in human rights, hopefully it means something, because a lot of people, that's a pretty new degree. People are like, what does that mean? But I definitely would love to work for the Minnesota Civil and Human Rights Department, like at the state level. They were involved with investigating like the police after George Floyd. And I thought that was pretty baller. And yeah, it's kind of like at a state level, like just the fact that we have a human rights department, I think is really cool. So I'd like to do that. I want to work on publishing more written material. I actually answered you guys' call on Instagram to submit work to the anthology of North American Romani women and like poetry and things like that. So nice. I was a little bit late, but I submitted something today and we'll see. But I submitted a poem, I guess. People who know me would be like, what? Rihanna submitted a poem? But yeah. So yeah, just like writing stuff and putting myself out there more with like my opinions.
Where can people find you on social media? How can they support your work?
I guess this is a project in the making, but I just created an alternate Instagram account called Rumi the Roma. I plan to like actually put content on there, and it'll just be like little snippets of like education things around like this thing in history happened or whatever. There is literally no content on there right now, but it's something that I plan to build. So Rumi the Roma. Otherwise, just like Rumi Hume. You'll find me on Facebook, Instagram. If you see anything that I publish, feel free to comment on it. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds good. By the time, because we're filming, or not filming, but we're recording this episode quite a bit early. Like, I think it'll probably come out in a few months. By the time it comes out, there might be content.
Nice. Okay, good to know. I have a little leeway.
So. Yeah.
I am social media. I'm not as on there as much as I like, because I'm in school and I'm busy. But you can follow my Holistic Health and Sport Performance podcast on YouTube. You can email me HULMEQUR@UNID.edu if you want to email me and talk sports and sports science, kinesiology. But yeah, other than that, thanks for allowing my sister and I to join the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, for reaching out to us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I super appreciate it. And I listen to your podcast, obviously. So thank you.
Thank you. We do love our listeners.
Thank you. All right, well, take care, everybody.
As well.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Romanistan Podcast.
You can find us on Instagram at Romanistan Podcast and on Facebook under the same name, and on Twitter at Romanistan Pod.
We recently started a Coffee fundraiser. That's KO-FI to help us expand. Our goal is to release 2 episodes a month, create video content like an advice column and other treats. And we would also like to register as a nonprofit so we can produce content by other Romani and Sinti creators. We are hoping to cover production costs like paying for our hosting site, website, editing, and producing, and all the rest. We would love it if you could contribute and spread the word. The link, Ko-fi, so it's ko-fi.com/Romanistan, is in our bio on Instagram, and it will also be in the show notes.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps us so much.
If you would like to advertise with us, email us at romanistanpodcast@gmail.com. We offer sliding scale for Romani, Sinti, and related businesses. So reach out.
You can find me, Jess, on Instagram at jesmina.fontila, and you can find my vintage and curiosities shop at Evil Eye Edit on Instagram and Etsy.
You can find me, Paulina Verminsky, on Instagram at @Paulina_V_ and at RomaniHolistic.com.
Romanistan is hosted by Jessica Reedy and Paulina Verminsky, conceived of by Paulina Verminsky, edited and produced by Cherub, with music by Victor Pachas and artwork by Elijah Vardo.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. I think we nailed it.